It's a Tuesday afternoon in the fall of 1984, and a 19-year-old sophomore at the University of Texas at Austin is sitting on the floor of his dorm room in the Dolby Center, surrounded by computer parts. There are motherboards stacked on his desk, hard drives on his bed, and cables running to a power strip that's pulling enough current to trip the building's breakers twice a week. His roommate has given up complaining.
His parents have sent his uncle to talk him out of this.
His name is Michael Dell. He started with $1,000 in savings at age 18. $1,000. And he's generating $80,000 a month in revenue by buying IBM PCs from local retailers, upgrading them with more memory and better hard drives, and reselling them at a markup through newspaper ads. He hasn't attended a lecture in weeks. He's about to drop out.
His uncle arrives, a successful orthodontist, makes the case for staying in school, and leaves. Dell drops out anyway. He registers a company called PCs Limited with that original $1,000. Within 15 years, it'll be an $18 billion business. Welcome back to Silicon Valley Strategy. I'm Myra D'Amico.
And I'm Travis Carlisle. This is episode 5. So a 19-year-old kid on the floor of his dorm room, tripping circuit breakers, ignoring his uncle. That's the origin of an $18 billion company built on a business model, not a technology. And what's remarkable is that the entire starting capital was $1,000. Not family money, not venture capital, $1,000 of savings from a teenager.
Today we're doing the PC wars. Dell, Compaq, and the broader story of what happens when a product becomes a commodity. And the only remaining question is, who has the best business model? This isn't a story about technology. Not really. The technology is identical. Every company in this story is selling the same Intel processor running the same Microsoft operating system. The product is indistinguishable. And yet the outcomes are wildly different. Some companies become worth billions, others go bankrupt. The variable that explains the difference isn't the product, it's the business model.
And the analytical point I want to make at the outset is, this episode is the payoff of everything we've discussed so far. Intel created the processor, Microsoft created the operating system, IBM created the open architecture, and the open architecture created the clone market. Today we're inside the clone market, and the question is, in a market where every competitor sells the same product, what determines who wins?
The answer, as we'll see, is that operational excellence and business model innovation can be as powerful as, and sometimes more powerful than, product innovation. Dell never invented a new technology. Not once. What Dell invented was a new way to sell an existing technology, and for a decade, that was enough.
And then it wasn't, which is the cautionary half of the story.
All right, trivia. This is a good one. Michael Dell started his company under a different name from his dorm room at UT Austin. What was the original name, and what was he actually doing that was generating $80,000 a month at age 19?
I love the origin story because it's so simple. There's no grand vision. There's just a kid who sees fat margins and decides to capture them.
If you're playing along, pause now. The answer. The company was originally called PCs Limited, registered with $1,000 in savings in 1984. And what Dell was doing was remarkably straightforward. He was buying IBM PCs from local retailers, machines that retailers had overstocked, upgrading them with additional memory and larger hard drives, and reselling them through classified ads in the local newspaper at prices below what the retailers charged for the base model. He was exploiting two inefficiencies. Retailers who had excess inventory they needed to liquidate, and customers who wanted more powerful machines at lower prices.
And the insight that turns this from a dorm room hustle into a business model revolution is, if I'm buying from retailers and reselling at a profit, why not skip the retailers entirely and sell directly to the customer? The retailer's margin is my opportunity. It's a deceptively simple question, but the answer will reshape the entire PC industry.
His parents were not enthusiastic. They sent his uncle, the orthodontist, to Austin to convince Michael to stay in school. The uncle made his pitch. Dell listened politely, and then he dropped out.
The uncle's visit became Dell company lore. It's their version of the pig story from the Noyce episode. A well-meaning authority figure who doesn't realize they're witnessing the founding of an industry.
Every origin story needs a doubter. Noyce had the college dean, Dell had the orthodontist.
The orthodontist. That's going to be the name of our memoir.
That origin story gives us Dell. But to understand why his business model worked so well, we need to understand what the PC market looked like. And that means starting with Compaq, because Compaq is the first company to prove that the IBM clone market is real.
It's 1982. The IBM PC has been on the market for about a year. Three engineers at Texas Instruments, Rod Canyon, Jim Harris, and Bill Murdo, meet at a House of Pies restaurant in Houston. And what happens next is one of those founding legends that's almost too good to check. They sketch the design for a portable IBM-compatible computer on the back of a placemat. Not a napkin, a House of Pies placemat.
A placemat. At a pie restaurant. There's something about the early PC era and its obsession with sketching on whatever paper surface is closest.
I mean, the image is perfect, right? Three Texas Instruments engineers probably eating pecan pie, drawing circuit diagrams on paper that has a picture of a slice of coconut cream in the corner. That placemat is now in the Smithsonian, by the way.
It's in the Smithsonian? The placemat?
The placemat is in the Smithsonian, which tells you something about how consequential Compaq turned out to be.
Compaq's founding insight is that the IBM PC architecture is open. The specs are published. Every component is available off the shelf. The only proprietary element is the BIOS, the basic input-output system, the low-level firmware that controls the hardware. If you can recreate the BIOS without copying IBM's code, you can build a machine that runs every IBM program without using any IBM technology.
And Compaq does exactly that. They hire a team of engineers who've never seen IBM's BIOS code to write a compatible BIOS from scratch. This clean room reverse engineering is legally defensible because the engineers aren't copying. They're independently recreating the same functionality. It's brilliant legal strategy wrapped in brilliant engineering execution.
And the broader world context. The PC market in 1982 is exploding. Business adoption of the IBM PC is growing at 40 or 50% per year. Every corporation in America is buying PCs for their employees. The total addressable market, which IBM estimated at 200,000 units, is clearly going to be millions. And the question of who will supply those millions of units is wide open.
The thing that's analytically interesting about the PC market in 1982 is that the product is already commoditizing. Every clone runs the same software. Every clone uses the same processor. The differentiation isn't in the technology. It's in the brand, the distribution, the service, and increasingly the price. This is a market that's screaming for someone to come along and disrupt the way the product gets to the customer.
And into this market come two radically different approaches. Compaq says, build the best clone, sell through the same retail and corporate channels that IBM uses, compete on brand and quality. Dell says, sell directly to the customer, build to order, carry no inventory, and compete on price and speed. Same product, same components, completely different business models. The results will diverge dramatically. Compaq ships its first product, the Compaq Portable, in 1983. It weighs 28 pounds and has a 9-inch green phosphor monitor. It's not light, but it's IBM compatible and it's portable, in the same way that a bowling ball is portable. You can physically carry it. You wouldn't want to carry it far.
28 pounds. That's a bag of dog food. You're not taking that through an airport.
You're checking it, but it works. Every IBM program runs on it, and Compaq prices it competitively with the IBM PC while offering portability as a genuine feature. First-year revenue, $111 million. That's the most successful first year for any American company at the time.
And then Compaq does something that fundamentally shifts the power dynamics of the PC industry. In 1986, Intel releases the 8386 processor, the first 32-bit x86 chip. IBM has a machine in development but hasn't shipped it. Compaq ships a 386-based PC before IBM does. This is the first time, the very first time, that a clone manufacturer beats IBM to market with new Intel silicon.
And this is the moment. This is the moment IBM loses control of the PC standard it created. Before the Compaq 386, the implicit assumption was that IBM would set the pace and the clones would follow. After the Compaq 386, the industry realizes that anyone can set the pace. IBM's brand still matters, but IBM's technical leadership is gone.
Compaq grows through the late 1980s and early 1990s into one of the largest PC companies in the world. By 1994, Compaq is the number one seller of PCs globally, having overtaken IBM. Revenue exceeds $10 billion. Rod Canyon's House of Pies placemat sketch has become one of the largest technology companies on Earth.
But Compaq's strategy, competing on brand, quality, and retail distribution, has a structural weakness that becomes visible only when someone figures out a different way to sell a computer. Compaq sells through dealers and retailers. That means Compaq needs inventory in the channel, inventory sitting on retail shelves, inventory in warehouses, inventory in transit, and in the PC market, inventory is toxic.
This is the crucial dynamic. PC components, processors, memory, hard drives, lose value every single day. Component prices decline roughly 30% per year, which works out to about 1% per week. Every week, a computer sits unsold in a warehouse. It's worth about 1% less than it was the week before. If Compaq has 90 days of inventory in the channel, the company is eating a 25 to 30% cost penalty on every unit before it even reaches the customer. The product is literally depreciating while it waits to be sold.
Which brings us to Dell and to a business model that turns that inventory problem on its head. Michael Dell's direct model is, at its core, a simple idea. Sell directly to the customer, build the computer after the order is placed, and carry as little inventory as possible. But the execution of this idea creates something genuinely revolutionary, a company where growth doesn't consume cash. Growth produces cash.
Let's actually walk through the economics because the numbers are stunning. In a traditional PC retail model, Compaq, HP, IBM, the process is manufacture the computer, ship it to a distributor, ship it to a retailer, wait for a customer to buy it. Total time from manufacture to sale, 60 to 90 days. Inventory, 60 to 90 days of supply.
In the Dell model, the customer calls Dell, places an order, and pays with a credit card. Dell receives the cash immediately. Dell then orders the components from suppliers who deliver them to Dell's factory in 4 to 6 days. Dell assembles the computer and ships it in 1 to 2 days. Total time from order to delivery, 7 to 10 days. Inventory, 6 days.
6 days versus 90 days. In a market where component prices decline 30% annually, Dell's cost advantage from inventory alone is somewhere between 15 and 20%. That's not a marginal advantage, that's a structural chasm.
I see this in startups all the time, and I want founders to really hear this. 15 to 20% cost advantage from inventory management alone. Not from better technology. Not from smarter engineers. From when you buy the parts.
Timing is literally money.
But the truly revolutionary part is the cash flow. And this is the concept that I think separates Dell from every other PC story. The customer pays Dell before Dell pays its suppliers. The credit card payment arrives on day one. Dell orders components on day two. The components arrive on day five. The computer ships on day seven. Dell pays the supplier at net 45 terms, meaning the supplier gets paid 45 days after delivery. So Dell has the customer's cash for 45 days before it pays for the components.
This is negative working capital. Cash comes in before costs go out. The faster Dell grows, the more cash it generates. In a normal business, growth consumes cash. You need to fund inventory, receivables, work in progress. In Dell's model, growth produces cash. Every new sale is a 45-day interest-free loan from the supplier.
And this is where it gets wild. If you run the math on Dell's negative cash conversion cycle, the gap between when cash comes in and when cash goes out, it was approximately negative 36 days at its peak, meaning Dell had the customer's money for 36 days before it paid anyone. Multiply that by Dell's revenue run rate, and you get a permanent growing pool of free cash that costs Dell nothing. At Dell's peak, the company was generating hundreds of millions of dollars in float, cash that had been received from customers but not yet paid to suppliers.
And the compounding is the key. This cash funded Dell's growth. Dell could grow at 30, 40, 50% per year without raising capital, without issuing debt, without selling equity. The business model was self-funding. The faster they grew, the more free cash they generated. The more free cash they generated, the more aggressively they could price. The more aggressively they priced, the faster they grew. It's a flywheel, but the fuel is the customer's own money.
And the beauty of the direct model goes beyond cash flow. Because Dell builds to order, every computer is configured exactly to the customer's specifications. No unsold inventory, no obsolete stock, no returns of out-of-date machines from retailers. The waste that's inherent in Compaq's retail model simply doesn't exist at Dell. It's not just a better business model, it's a structurally different kind of business.
And the direct channel also gives Dell something Compaq doesn't have, a relationship with the customer. Dell knows who's buying, what they're buying, and when they'll need to buy again. Compaq sells to a retailer and loses visibility into the end customer entirely. Dell's direct model is simultaneously a manufacturing advantage, a cash flow advantage, a pricing advantage, and an information advantage.
Which raises the obvious question, why didn't everyone just copy it?
Compaq recognizes the threat that Dell represents and tries to respond. In 1999, Compaq attempts to build a direct sales capability alongside its existing retail channel. The effort fails spectacularly.
And the reason it fails gets to the heart of why Dell's business model was so powerful. It wasn't just better, it was structurally impossible for Compaq to adopt without blowing up their existing business. If Compaq starts selling directly to consumers at lower prices, it undercuts its own retail partners. The retailers, who account for the majority of Compaq sales, will revolt. They'll stop carrying Compaq machines. They'll promote HP or IBM instead. Compaq can't go direct without destroying its retail channel, and it can't survive without its retail channel.
Well, every Compaq executive can see that Dell's model is better. They can run the math on the inventory advantage, the cash flow advantage, the pricing advantage. They know the numbers, and they can't do anything about it because their entire business is built on a distribution model that's incompatible with Dell's. The organizational cost of adopting the Challenger's model exceeds the benefit because the transition would destroy the existing business before the new one could replace it.
That's what makes it so painful. It's not ignorance, it's awareness combined with impotence. The executives at Compaq were smart people. They could see the future. They just couldn't get there from where they stood.
Compaq's response, instead of trying to out-Dell Dell, is to try to move upmarket. In 1998, Compaq acquires Digital Equipment Corporation, DEC, for $9.6 billion. DEC makes proprietary minicomputers, servers, and enterprise systems. The logic is, if the PC is becoming a commodity, move into higher-margin enterprise hardware.
And this is exactly the wrong move. The entire trajectory of the technology industry is away from proprietary systems and toward commodity x86-based servers, DX Alpha processor, DX VMS operating system, DEC's proprietary server architecture, all of it is on the wrong side of history. Compaq spends $9.6 billion buying into a trend that's ending.
That's the Fairchild camera mistake from episode one, but in reverse. Fairchild bought a semiconductor company and didn't give it equity. Compaq bought a proprietary hardware company and didn't notice the world was going commodity.
Same blindness, different decade.
By 2001, Compaq is struggling. The DEC acquisition has been a financial disaster. Dell is eating Compaq's market share from below with that relentless pricing advantage funded by negative working capital. And in 2002, HP acquires Compaq for $25 billion in a deal that's controversial, acrimonious, and ultimately destructive for both companies. The merger produces years of integration chaos, culture clashes, and declining competitiveness. Neither HP nor Compaq emerges stronger.
And Dell? Dell peaks. Briefly, in the early 2000s, Dell is the most valuable PC company in the world. The direct model is being studied in every business school. Michael Dell is on the cover of every magazine. PCs Limited, the $1,000 dorm room hustle, has become an $18 billion company in 15 years.
And then the commodity trap closes on Dell, too.
Because here's the thing about Dell's operational advantage. It erodes. Other manufacturers learn the supply chain techniques. They shorten their inventory cycles. HP hires Dell's people. Lenovo studies Dell's playbook. The direct model, once a radical innovation, becomes the industry standard. And when everyone has optimized their supply chain, the advantage disappears. Dell's moat was operational excellence. When the competition caught up operationally, the moat was gone.
The PC itself becomes a commodity in the fullest sense. Margins compress to low single digits for every manufacturer. The product is indistinguishable. The supply chain is optimized industry-wide. There's no remaining basis for competitive advantage except scale. And even scale provides only marginal cost benefits when everyone is buying from the same component suppliers.
And this is the cruelest irony of Dell's story. The negative working capital model, the very thing that made Dell unstoppable, only works at full power in a high-growth environment. When the PC market matures and growth slows, the float shrinks. When competitors match your supply chain, the cost advantage shrinks. When the growth engine stalls and the moat erodes at the same time, you're left competing on pure scale in a zero-margin market, which is exactly what happened.
Dell went private in 2013 because the public markets could no longer justify a premium valuation for a commodity PC business. The most innovative business model of the 1990s became a commodity business in the 2010s. That's a 20-year arc from revolutionary to irrelevant. Let's run the seven powers analysis on the PC wars. And I want to focus on the asymmetry between Dell and Compaq because I think it's one of the cleanest examples in the entire course of why business model matters more than product in a commodity market.
Take it away.
Process power first. Dell's supply chain and direct model were genuine process power in Helmer's framework. Process power means that a company has developed organizationally embedded processes, ways of operating, that are extremely difficult for competitors to replicate. Dell's direct model wasn't a single innovation. It was a system of interlocking practices, build-to-order manufacturing, just-in-time supplier relationships, customer direct sales, negative working capital financing, and continuous supply chain optimization. Each element reinforced the others. You couldn't copy one piece and get the benefit. You had to copy the entire system, which required rebuilding your organization from scratch.
And this is why Compaq's attempt to go direct failed. Compaq tried to bolt a direct channel onto its existing retail-centric organization. But the direct model isn't a channel. It's an operating system. It requires different supplier relationships, different manufacturing processes, different sales compensation, different inventory management. Compaq would have had to rebuild the company from the ground up to match Dell, and they couldn't do that while simultaneously running their existing business.
Second, scale economies. And here there's a paradox. As Dell got bigger, its supply chain advantage grew. More volume meant better terms from suppliers. Better supplier terms meant lower costs. Lower costs meant lower prices. Lower prices meant more volume. The scale advantage was self-reinforcing. But, and this is the critical caveat, the scale advantage was relative, not absolute. It only mattered as long as Dell was larger than its competitors. Once HP and Lenovo achieved comparable scale, the advantage narrowed.
And this is where I want to talk about what Dell didn't have. No network economies. No switching costs. A Dell computer runs the same software as an HP computer or a Lenovo computer. There's nothing about owning a Dell that makes you more likely to buy the next Dell. No ecosystem. No lock-in. No data that stays with the platform. The customer's only consideration is price, quality, and service at the moment of purchase.
Which is a devastating thing to say about an $18 billion company. No stickiness.
None. And that's the structural lesson. You can be enormous and still be fragile if there's nothing keeping your customers from walking away.
This is the fundamental vulnerability of a process power moat in a commodity market. Process power gives you a cost advantage. It doesn't give you customer stickiness. When the process advantage erodes, when competitors learn to do what you do, there's nothing left to prevent the customer from switching. And in a commodity market, the customer will always switch to the lowest price.
So the arc of Dell is invent a revolutionary business model, ride it to dominance, watch competitors copy it, lose the advantage, and end up in a commodity trap with everyone else. Process power is real, but it's not permanent. It buys you time. It doesn't buy you immortality.
The counterpositioning lens is the other one I want to emphasize, because we already saw it play out in the Compaq story. Dell's direct model was structurally incompatible with every retail channel-dependent PC manufacturer. Compaq couldn't go direct without alienating its retailers. IBM couldn't go direct without undermining its enterprise sales force. HP couldn't go direct without cannibalizing its dealer network. The incumbents were structurally prevented from copying Dell's model. This is why Dell grew so fast. The competitors could see the threat and couldn't respond.
But, and this is important, that structural barrier had a shelf life. Eventually, the retail channel eroded on its own. The internet made direct sales possible for everyone. When Best Buy and CompUSA became less important as distribution channels, the barrier that protected Dell's position weakened. The incumbents could go direct because the retail channel no longer had the leverage to prevent it.
That's an important point. The counterposition is only durable as long as the structural barrier that prevents the incumbent from copying you remains intact. When the structure changes, the advantage evaporates.
Quick aside, if you want to test yourself on these frameworks, the online course at svastrategy.exyz has quizzes after every episode and mystery company simulations, where you analyze real business model decisions without knowing the company. It's a great way to build the muscle for this kind of strategic thinking. That's SV, short for Silicon Valley, strategy.xyz.
SVstrategy.ez, highly recommend it. I want to go deeper on three dynamics that the PC wars reveal, because I think they're some of the most practical lessons in the course.
Go.
First, the mechanics of negative working capital as a growth engine. We walked through Dell's cash conversion cycle in the story, but I want to make the math even more concrete. If Dell has a negative cash conversion cycle of 36 days and annual revenue of $18 billion, the float, the cash sitting in Dell's accounts at any given time that belongs economically to suppliers, is roughly $1.8 billion. That's $1.8 billion of free capital generated purely by the gap between when customers pay and when Dell pays its suppliers. And that number grows proportionally with revenue. So every $1 billion of revenue growth generates another $100 million in float. Growth literally funds itself.
And the lesson for founders is, look at your cash conversion cycle. How many days between when you collect cash from customers and when you pay your suppliers? If that number is negative, if cash comes in before costs go out, you've got a structural growth advantage that most of your competitors don't. Amazon has this, insurance companies have this, SaaS companies with annual prepayment have this. It's one of the most underrated structural advantages in business.
So, I want to push back slightly on the universality. Negative working capital is powerful, but it depends on supplier willingness to extend terms. If Dell's suppliers had demanded cash on delivery, the entire model collapses. The negative working capital advantage is really a three-party relationship. The customer pays early, the supplier pays late, and Dell sits in the middle collecting the float. If either the customer or the supplier changes behavior, the advantage disappears.
Fair. It's a powerful but fragile advantage, which we saw play out as the PC market matured.
Second, business model innovation versus product innovation. Dell never invented a product, not a single new technology. Every Dell computer used the same Intel processor, the same Microsoft operating system, the same commodity components as every other PC manufacturer. The innovation was entirely in how the product was sold, manufactured, and delivered. And for a decade, this was more valuable than any product innovation in the PC market.
The lesson is, when the product is commoditized, the business model is the product. The way you make it, sell it, and deliver it becomes the differentiation. And business model innovation can be harder to copy than product innovation because it requires organizational change, not just engineering talent. But, and this is the caveat, business model innovations can eventually be replicated. Process power decays. Network effects and switching costs are stickier.
And the third dynamic, the commodity trap itself. When a product becomes a true commodity, when every competitor offers an indistinguishable product, the only remaining basis for competition is cost. And cost competition is a race to zero margins. The PC wars prove that in a market where the product is standardized and the business model can be copied, the end state is always the same. Compressed margins, no pricing power, and the slow erosion of every competitive advantage.
And the escape from the commodity trap is always the same. Move to an adjacent market where you can rebuild structural advantage. Dell did this through the acquisition of EMC, the enterprise data storage giant, in 2016, moving into enterprise storage and servers, where switching costs and service relationships provide the stickiness that the consumer PC market never had. What does a founder take from the PC wars?
So, the first lesson is about the relationship between architecture and value capture. This is the payoff of the entire first five episodes. IBM created the open architecture. Intel and Microsoft captured the value because they controlled the two proprietary choke points inside the open system. The clone manufacturers, Compaq, Dell, HP, hundreds of others, competed fiercely for the leftover value, which was the hardware margin. And that margin was competed down to near zero. The lesson is clean. In any technology ecosystem, value concentrates at the choke points. If you're not at a choke point, you're in a commodity business, regardless of how good your operations are.
And this connects directly to the question every founder should ask: where's the choke point in my value chain? If the answer is someone else controls it, you need a different strategy. Because no amount of operational excellence will overcome the structural disadvantage of being in the commodity layer.
The second lesson is about the half-life of process power. Dell had genuine process power. The supply chain, the direct model, the negative working capital, all of it was real and it was genuinely hard to replicate. But process power has a half-life. It decays. Competitors study your model, they hire your people, they implement your practices. The advantage narrows every year. If process power is your only moat, you need to know its half-life and you need a plan for what comes after it decays.
And the Compaq lesson, the acquisition of DEC, is a warning about where companies go when they feel the commodity trap closing. The instinct is to acquire your way up market, to buy a higher margin business that masks the deterioration of your core. But if the acquisition is in a market that's also declining, as DEC's proprietary server market was, you haven't escaped the trap. You've just entered a different trap at a higher price.
The third lesson is about the durability of different moat types. This course has now covered companies with every type of Helmer power. Intel had switching costs and scale economies. Microsoft had network economies and switching costs. Apple had product differentiation. Dell had process power. And the hierarchy is clear. Network economies and switching costs are the most durable. Scale economies are moderately durable. Process power is the least durable. Dell's arc proves this. When your moat is purely operational, it's a matter of when, not if. Competitors will match you.
Takeaways, you first.
My first takeaway is about Michael Dell himself. Here's a kid who starts with $1,000 at age 18. Not family money, not venture capital, $1,000 of personal savings, and sees something that the entire PC industry doesn't. That the retail distribution channel is extracting value without creating it. The retailer's margin is the customer's overpayment. Dell's entire empire is built on the insight that a middleman who adds no value is an opportunity, not a fixture. And I think this is the most reliable pattern for business model disruption. Find the middleman who adds cost but not value and remove them. Uber did this to taxi dispatchers. Airbnb did this to hotel booking systems. Amazon did this to retail in general. The pattern is always the same, a layer of intermediation that exists because of historical accident, not because it creates value for the customer.
Well, that's good. My first takeaway is about Compaq, and it's personal. I keep thinking about Rod Canyon and the placemat at the House of Pies, a placemat that's now in the Smithsonian. Compaq was a genuinely great company. They reverse-engineered the BIOS. They beat IBM to market with the 386. They became the number one PC company in the world. And then they made a single bad acquisition, DEC, for $9.6 billion. And within 4 years, they were acquired by HP in a deal that destroyed value for both companies. What gets me is how fast it happened. Number one in the world to gone in about 8 years. And the cause wasn't a slow decline. It was one bad bet on the wrong trend. the margin between dominance and irrelevance in technology is thinner than people think.
That's worth sitting with. The House of Pies to the Smithsonian to gone. All in about 20 years.
And both Dell and Compaq illustrate the same framework, which I'd call negative working capital as competitive weapon. Dell's cash conversion cycle, collecting from customers before paying suppliers, was the financial engine that made the direct model unstoppable. It turned growth into a source of free capital instead of a drain on it. For founders, the takeaway is concrete. If you can structure your business so that customers pay before you incur costs, growth funds itself. That's the most powerful financing structure in business because it costs nothing, scales automatically, and compounds with revenue. But it's also fragile. It depends on supplier terms, customer behavior, and growth rates all staying favorable. When any of those conditions change, the advantage erodes.
So, my second takeaway is structural. The PC wars prove that in a market governed by an open standard, value accrues to the standard setter, not the implementer. Intel and Microsoft set the standard, x86 and Windows. Dell, Compaq, HP, and hundreds of others implemented it. The standard setters earned sustained high-margin returns for decades. The implementers fought a brutal, margin-destroying war that ended with most of them bankrupt, acquired, or marginalized. If you're building a business in a market governed by someone else's standard, your best-case outcome is Dell, a decade of dominance followed by commoditization. Your worst case is Compaq, 8 years of relevance followed by absorption. Neither outcome generates the kind of durable compounding value that owning the standard creates.
And my last takeaway is about the relationship between innovation and durability. Dell invented the most important business model innovation in the PC era, more important than any product innovation, and it lasted about 15 years before competitors replicated it and the advantage disappeared. 15 years is a long time. It made Michael Dell a billionaire. It made thousands of employees wealthy, but it's not permanent. And the reason it's not permanent is that business model innovations, unlike network effects or switching costs, can be copied by any competitor willing to rebuild their organization. The insight I take from Dell is business model innovation is extraordinarily powerful in the short and medium term, but it's not a substitute for structural moats. If you're building for the long term, you need both. Dell had the innovation. Dell didn't have the structure. And the structure is what lasts.
Before we go, if you want to understand the full arc from Fairchild through the PC Wars, the online course at svstrategy.ex, YZ ties all of these episodes together with an interactive timeline showing how the technology waves built on each other. You can see exactly how the Fairchild diaspora led to Intel, which led to the PC ecosystem, which led to Dell. That's svstrategy.xyz.
svstrategy.exyz. We'll see you next time.
Next time on the show, we leave the PC era and enter the internet age. Cisco, the plumbing of the internet, and the question of what happens when the infrastructure company becomes the most valuable company in the world. Routers, switches, and the dot-com bubble.
From commodity PCs to internet infrastructure, the substrate shifts.
The substrate always shifts. That might be the single-sentence summary of this entire course.
Put that on the poster.